98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata. This is the greatest
show. Good morning and welcome.
Show the world.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio
really
show that's
is.
Ever existed.
It really, really
in
is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
Happy Tuesday, Valley sports fans. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata. Jarrett Carlin, as soon as he gets done eating his lox and whitefish on an over-toasted English muffin.
Wow.
Bagel.
Oh, that was a bagel? It was getting a little burnt around the edges. I'm thinking you'd like it like that.
How was it, Jarrett?
Jarrett, what are you doing?
Oh, you didn't eat it yet?
You didn't eat it yet?
Oh.
What is going on, Jarrett?
Jarrett's all discombobulated.
Come on, man. Show has started.
I have not eaten it yet. I'm waiting for the commercial break.
That's why you're so discombobulated. Because you're
I don't have my lox power.
Your brain is being
that
just,
carrot is out there.
I'm dreaming of smoked
fish. Salivating like Pavlov's dog back there.
He can't even concentrate. He couldn't take his mask off to speak into the microphone. Yeah, seriously. You know, Mike Tyson tried to put his mouthpiece back into his ear when he got knocked out by Buster Douglas.
That's what you look like. I had the headphones on over the mask, so I kept trying to take the mask off with the headphone on, but then I took the. You know.
All right, well, we've got big news today, man. DeAndre Hopkins has spoken, Vinny, and it turns out he wasn't trying to flip off Trump supporters on the freeway. He was trying to put up some peace signs, and he said his index fingers weren't working proper. They were a little bit tired. I'm not joking, actually. He jokes about this, but we do have DeAndre Hopkins. We will during the course of today. You will hear what went down with him. He, like I said, he wasn't going to run from the incident, but it's interesting. It's interesting.
Today is a momentous day for another reason, too.
And what would that be?
I wore a sweatshirt to work today.
All right.
I'm wearing long pants.
Yeah.
I was able to shut the air conditioning off at the at the homestead, open the windows. It's finally here, I think. Although we're going to get a little bit more of an increase in weather in like a week, right? In temperature.
I'm thinking yes. I'm thinking this is not going to be our weather for the next couple of months. I would like it to be. But we are getting close to November.
It's going
to
be almost 90 by Friday.
Is it really?
Yeah. Nothing one more worse. Day of 70, then like 83, and then like 87.
There's really nothing worse for me than a hot Halloween. Halloween should not be hot. I deal with this at Oktoberfest when my band has played Oktoberfest.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like every Oktoberfest, it's smoking outside.
It's true.
And it shouldn't be hot at Oktoberfest.
It's demoralizing. And when it lingers on as long as Halloween, which it has in years past, that's people's breaking point.
Yeah, that is
so. At least we're getting a little bit of a respite.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I just looked at it like 88 by the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. Okay,
I'll take it.
There you go. All right, let's start this freak show, Jarrett.
Look at me being cheery.
You can start eating.
The splash, splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The splash.
Cannonball.
And we start the splash for Tuesday, October 27th with the Arizona Cardinals. A little thinner in the running back room. As we learned yesterday, Kenyon Drake expected to miss a few weeks after suffering an ankle injury in Sunday night's win over the Seattle Seahawks. Adam Schefter of ESPN was the first to report that the team is treating it like a high ankle sprain. Drake wasn't the only Cardinal not to finish the game. Linebacker Isaiah Irving was carted off and, according to reports, could be out for the year with a back injury. Linebacker Jordan Hicks left. That's been diagnosed as an ankle injury. Defensive lineman Zach Allen, Jordan Phillips also did not finish that game. Maybe it's a good thing the Cardinals have a bye week this week before hosting the Miami Dolphins a week from Sunday.
Yeah, I think physically and emotionally, this bye week's coming at a good time. I think playing a couple of primetime games in a row in the span of 7 days or whatever it was, I think this team would have been ripe to lose. It'd be hard to come down from what they just went through. So I think this bye week couldn't have been better.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly build a compelling case for that.
But then again, the Seahawks had 2 weeks, 14 days to prepare. The Cardinals had 6 days for the game, and the Cardinals were a fresher team at the end. So go figure.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Nothing makes sense in 2020.
No.
Week 7 wrapped up last night in L.A. Rams stifled the Chicago Bears 24-10. Jared Goff, 2 touchdown passes. Rams defense held Chicago's offense without a touchdown. Their only touchdown was a defensive score by Eddie Jackson. That was not much of a game. But I will say this. Kudos to Gerald Everett. I completely sold out my fantasy team for a win yesterday, Ben.
You did?
I mismanaged my roster so bad last week. I had some players on bye.
Okay.
So before the Thursday night game, Justin Tucker is my kicker. I had him on a bye, so I picked up Graham Gano. I mistakenly assumed that once I picked him up, he would automatically go into the starting rotation spot.
Oh, and
he
that
didn't,
happen.
So he was on the bench, so I had to pick up another. So I have 3 kickers on my roster.
Oh, that's good.
And the only player I had left, trailing Doug Franz by like 10 points, 9 points going into last night, was Tyler Higbee. Then I get the notification, he's not going to play.
Uh-huh.
So I have to roll the dice and pick a tight end from last night's game, Cole Kmet or Gerald Everett. I picked Everett, and he scored a touchdown and won the game for me.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah, thank goodness you didn't lose to Franz.
Take that, Franz.
That's good. Good. Well done, Vinny.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers have officially signed wide receiver Antonio Brown. He's not eligible to practice until after the Bucs Week 8 game against the Giants. Tampa Bay also announced that receiver Chris Godwin having surgery for a broken finger. He's out Monday night against New York. Dez Bryant is now a member of the Baltimore Ravens practice squad.
Interesting.
He's back in the NFL. That happened just minutes before the show started.
It did, and he was very emotional on Twitter. He said he was crying, tears of joy, getting back into the NFL. That's an interesting fit. I don't know how much talent or wheels he has left. But he can be a big physical receiver.
He can be. It's been a long time since he's been that, though.
Yeah, true.
Due to injury and other factors. World Series Game 6 on tap tonight in Arlington. The Dodgers on the doorstep of their first championship since 1988. L.A. is sending Tony Gonsolin to the mound against Tampa Bay's Blake Snell. Interesting to note, in this series, the Dodgers have won all the odd-numbered games.
Mm-hmm.
The Rays have taken all the evens. Tonight's an even. First pitch, 5:08.
This really, really needs to go to 7 games. We really need Dodgers fans, and we've got some Dodgers fans who are very loyal listeners, and I wish you no anxiety. I really don't. But I really do, actually.
Yeah. This
because
is not about
Dodgers.
You. This is about us.
Because it's really not about you. This is really much, much bigger than that. So the way that the Rays won Game 4, is that right? Yes. Was so unbelievably satisfying because it came against the Dodgers. One more night of something like that, and I'm good. I won't even care if the Dodgers win it. If we can get one more moment like that.
How dare you say that? You can't. It's got to go to 7 because that means the Dodgers still have a chance to lose.
Last time I mentioned the Dodgers winning a championship, one of our most loyal listeners tweeted a picture of him with a gun pretending to shoot it at me. Yeah, right?
5:08 first pitch. You can hear it on ESPN 620 AM beginning with pregame coverage at 4:30. We'll then join that game in progress here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station at 6 following the conclusion of Burns and Gambo. And ESPN had an attempt that they were attempting to operate a bubble situation for college basketball in Walt Disney World in Orlando. They've canceled all the events due to many schools' concerns over the health and safety protocols required to participate. That was reported by The Athletic yesterday. 8 non-conference tournaments, the Champions Classic, Charleston Classic, Myrtle Beach Invitational, NIT Season Tip-Off, Wooden Legacy, Orlando Invitational, Jimmy V Classic, and Diamond Head Classic. All moving to Orlando, that whole thing is being scrapped. That's a big blow to college basketball.
Yeah, it really, really is.
There you go. There is your splash for October 27th here on Bickley and Murata. Coming up next, a lot of people have been clamoring for more of a role from Chase Edmonds for the Arizona Cardinals. Well, he's got it. Is he ready for it? We'll get into that and more next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's pretty boy football.
Everybody's going to have their opinion no matter what.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
You got D-Hop, you got Larry, Christian Kirk, the running backs, Kenyon, Chase, even the tight ends.
I mean, we have everything that you need.
This offense has the potential to be the best offense in the NFL this year.
Bickley and Marotta talk Cardinals. Now.
Huge. I remember talking to Hop, CK, Larry before the game. I said, we're going to find out what type of team we are today. And I mean that by, obviously, we have some decent wins on the board and everything like that. But you know Seattle's going to be playing in January. Everybody knows they're going to be in the playoff hunt, playoff race. And this is those type of games where you really find out how real are we. You know, what are we made of? It was a lot of adversity. Kept taking punches, and we responded so well. So it does a lot for our confidence. But I think it truly sets the standard this time to where we can no longer play down to our competition. We got to win the games we're supposed to win and really be in those dogfight games, you know, for the long road.
That is the voice of Chase Edmonds following Sunday night's win over the Seattle Seahawks. Chase Edmonds, one of the big contributors for the Cardinals, came in, was playing a role in the passing game out of the backfield, even with Kenyon Drake healthy. Drake injures the ankle. Chase Edmonds starts to take over in the run game, very instrumental in the late offense for the Cardinals. And now, with Kenyon Drake, we know he's going to be out for a couple weeks. A few weeks, I guess, was the terminology that Adam Schefter reported, Bick.
Which is good news, given the immediate optics of the injury and the way Kenyon Drake reacted. He was so emotional that we all kind of associated that emotion with end-of-season injury.
Yeah, because players usually know. And we've seen instances where it looks really bad, and then it's not quite as bad. This is one of those, and that is a good thing, because the Cardinals are better when they have options in the backfield.
Yeah.
Chase Edmonds now, he's going to get the opportunity. And here was one of the money quotes that he gave about having this opportunity now to step in as the starting running back for the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, man, I work my ass off day in, day out, you know, since February. So whatever happens, I'm going to be ready. I'll be ready to answer the bell, whatever it is, whatever my role is. You know, obviously we got a creative head coach in Cliff, so I'm sure he'll find ways to get more people involved until we get KD back.
On that Zoom call with him, it was punctuated, obviously, with an obscenity, but it was really kind of it was an exclamation point. It was effective. Put it that way. Hearing it live, it was an effective show of what he feels about this. Keep in mind that Chase Edmonds is his own Mighty Mouse kind of story. Maybe not like Kyler Murray, but he's 5'9". He played football at Fordham. Uh-huh. Okay, and he had a great day subbing last year for David Johnson in the Meadowlands with 3 20-plus yard touchdown runs. This kid has been bursting with talent. He's third on the team in receiving, and he's barely been on the field.
It's true. And we talked about this before going into last week's game, Bick. While you're very pleased with what Chase Edmonds has done in the passing game out of the backfield, and they even split him out a lot, I expected Kenyon Drake to be more involved in the pass game, where they've really had way more success throwing the ball to Chase Edmonds than they have to Kenyon Drake.
Which I think is why Kenyon Drake hasn't received those kind of touches, because on the plays where I think the wide receiver out of the backfield is a prominent option, I think they've saved those reps for Chase Edmonds. Maybe I'm wrong about that. This is a great opportunity for Chase Edmonds. I would also, if I was the Arizona Cardinals, you really have got to be careful not to heap too much on Chase Edmonds right away. That's the way I would play it. I'm sure he's ready for a big workload, but who do you have underneath him? You've got DJ Foster, you've got Eno Benjamin, as you mentioned.
Your choice of ASU running backs.
You've got Jonathan Ward.
Yeah.
So you've got three guys. You've got your choice of ASU running backs. There is no clear cut favorite, which worries me.
Yeah, Cliff Kingsbury was asked about that yesterday in his press conference.
I'd say at this point it would be a group effort. I mean, they all bring something unique, and we like all three guys. Obviously, that's why they're here. But I wouldn't say there's one that we're leaning towards over the other two. You know, we'll have a competition with those guys and see who practices the best and kind of take it from there.
And, you know, we've seen glimpses from all three of those guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're big DJ Foster fans, obviously big Eno Benjamin fan, and there was no preseason, but going back to that red and white practice, Eno Benjamin was one of the highlights. He had a couple of nice runs. Heard some good things about Jonathan Ward as well. So, you know, running backs, they get the label, and there's a lot of proof to back this up. Dime a dozen. You can find these guys, you can plug them in, but when you are languishing on practice squads or getting very, very few chances, these guys are hungry. They want this opportunity. Now, I think most of it is going to fall into the lap of Chase Edmonds.
No, let's be honest. If he can handle the load, he will handle the load in a Cliff Kingsbury offense.
Yes. Yeah. There's something to be said
for
that.
There's not a whole lot of proof that Cliff likes to split carries between running backs under normal circumstances when he's got a full complement. Now, where this becomes interesting to me is Chase Edmonds has 29 carries this year. So he doesn't have enough to qualify for the league leaders in yards per carry, but he is averaging 6.1 yards per carry,
which is pretty good,
which would be tied for third in the league right now. Lamar Jackson at 6.9 as a quarterback is one. Kyler Murray as a quarterback at 6.7 is number two. And Miles Sanders of Philadelphia on 71 carries, 6.1 yards per carry. He'd be right there.
That's an impressive company.
Yes.
It really, really is. Big opportunity for the young man. We have visited with him many, many times. He is really smart. He very, very aware. He's got great vision. You can see he processes things very quickly, which I think helps him immensely on a football field. And he's driven to succeed, and he's been very patient. He's been very supportive of who he was backing up, whether it's been David Johnson or Kenyon Drake. This is how it happens in the NFL.
And I would think he knows what a big opportunity this is, because last time he had this opportunity, when David Johnson got hurt and he became the lead back, he got hurt himself after a game. Kenyon Drake came in, and then Chase never saw the field again, essentially.
Well, yeah, but if Chase Edmonds doesn't get hurt following that game at the Meadowlands against the Giants, and he did get hurt the next week and then missed the Rams game, they're not making that deal, probably, to get Chase Edmonds at that point.
Yeah.
Or to Kenyon Drake at that point, excuse me.
Yeah. So this is something where, he's got the bye week to fully get assimilated with this thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he handles it. We've already seen how he handles this, and he's a terrific player. And
I'll tell you one thing. He's probably the number one most picked up fantasy player over the next week or so.
Yep.
Because every time he's ever had a chance, he's really produced.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry. I've got him slotted, bro.
Fortunately, they don't play this week.
I drafted him.
Oh, did you?
I did. Originally.
Look at that foresight by Dan Vick.
I'm pretty sure Dan had him. You had him 2 years ago with Josh Rosen.
I did.
When he wasn't the starter.
Yeah, I did draft Josh Rosen. That is absolutely the case.
And you started him every week. The show of defiance, a thumbing of the nose to the rest of the league.
I had Garoppolo got injured that year,
pathetic.
If I remember.
Yeah. That was really, really bad.
Did you win more games than the Cardinals did that year?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think he won one game.
It was a really bad fantasy football year for me. But then I came back and won it all last year. So, hey, it's all good.
Rebuilding efforts.
It's all good. This year,
Herculean.
I'm hanging by my fingernails this year.
Me too, with my three.
What are you, 5-1?
No, I'm 4-3 now, I think.
I'm 5-2.
I'm 3-4.
We're all lumped. We're all playing to try to catch Luke Lipinski again.
No, he's not winning again,
is he? Absolutely he is.
Is he really?
I'm pulling it up right here. Full standings. Luke Lipinski's team of Asta LaVisca, get it? 7-0. Jared's 5-2.
If Luke Lipinski is this good, does he get involved in a lot of cash money leagues? Is this like maybe his major source of income, you think? It could be. I mean, if he's that good at it, why would you not do it for money?
I'm tied for first in the division with one Sarah Cazell, 4-3. We're in the mediocre division, thankfully, Sarah.
My team was doing so well until 2 weeks ago. Lots of injuries. My running backs are all kaput. So,
yeah.
Oh, well.
I've had injuries throughout my wide receiving core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since week one for you, no?
Yes. All right, coming up.
I lost Christian McCaffrey, but he's coming back, so it's all good.
He's getting close.
Yeah.
Not
this week. Coming up, game 6 of the World Series. Can the L.A. Dodgers exercise their demons and finally win it? We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
And the pitch on the way. Swing, line drive, right center. It's a base hit. Kiermaier around third. He scores the tying run to third base and being waved home and falling down. And now they've got to cop between third and home. The ball gets away. In to score, Rosarena. The Rays have won.
There's your Dan Johnson moment. Oh, my!
That was the final play of Game 4 of the World Series on Saturday night. Audio courtesy of WDAE in Tampa. That tied the series up at 2 games apiece. Dodgers bounce back in Game 5. They win 4-2. They've got a 3-2 series lead going into what could be the decider tonight, Bick. Game 6 in Arlington. But they don't have one of their top flight starters on the mound tonight. They are going with Tony Gonsolin, which has been an interesting strategy for the Dodgers. And we've seen it, you know, the advent of this more is going with guys who have a shorter leash in big, crucial situations. And that's what the Dodgers are going with tonight against the ace for Tampa Bay, Blake Snell.
Yeah, it sets up well for Tampa tonight. They get the big edge in the starting pitching matchup. But what does that mean with these teams anyways?
Who knows?
You would think with Blake Snell it would mean something, but who knows, right?
I'm glad he decided to play after he said he wasn't going to play earlier in the year. Remember?
That's right. That was him.
I ain't playing. And now he's pitching in Game 6 of the World Series.
I forgot about that completely. Wow.
It does seem like 10 years ago.
Well, I was thinking last night about the Diamondbacks Fan Fest, and that seems to me like it's 7.5 years ago. And that was,
8 months ago?
8 months ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Again, not to get sidetracked here, but I remember the part of the Ken Kendrick media availability and talking to the fans there. He was calling Mike Hazen a rock star. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is like the behind the music season.
What a difference a pandemic makes.
Right,
huh?
Right. Okay, on to tonight's game. The NBA finals and the NBA season in a bubble ended with a whimper, not a bang, in my opinion. There was a terrific Game 5, but Game 6 just kind of fell off the map, and it was never competitive, and it was just yucky. What will Major League Baseball offer up? This series threatened to be insanely cool with what went down on Saturday, but nobody was watching baseball on a Saturday night. And I said it earlier, Saturday Night Live outrated Saturday Night World Series Baseball. And a lot of it is Tampa. But yet Tampa, in a weird way, they've kind of been very embraceable throughout all this, trying to steal home, all of this stuff. I hope that there's a good night for Major League Baseball. I hope there's a Game 7 for Major League Baseball, because we're kind of now in the throes of football in this country, and we've had a succession of great NFL games to kind of really get jazzed about. Not just locally. I'm talking about across the board.
Tonight could be the last non-football game for a long time.
Yes, a very long time. But I'll say this, Big. If you are a baseball fan, and you've made the decision not to watch because it's Tampa, you're missing out. This has been a very entertaining series, I think.
I agree. I totally agree.
With some unlikely heroes, with some big names coming up big in big spots. Going into tonight's game, here's a couple of sound bites from Dave Roberts, the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
We know that that's a very, very good ball club over there, and nothing is going to be handed to us. So, yeah, our only focus is to win Game 6. That's it.
Okay. Only focus is on Game 6, but he was also asked about going with Walker Buehler for a potential Game 7.
You're putting yourself in a situation where after winning a game, to put him in a tougher situation. So there's already guaranteed, at worst, Game 7. So it just doesn't make sense for Walker. He hasn't done it. There's a blister component that we've dealt with that it just brings that more into play without the extra day. So we thought it through.
But, I mean, doesn't you contradict yourself? We're only worried about Game 6, but not about Game 7?
Yeah.
It is amazing to me, and maybe this is indicative of the frustration level of the Dodgers fans. You'd be hard-pressed to find a Dodger fan that likes Dave Roberts. Every time they lose a postseason game, he's the biggest moron in the world. He has no idea how to handle his bullpen. What is he doing? Why is he taking Kershaw out after getting two outs on two pitches in the sixth inning on, on Saturday? I mean, or on Sunday. He can't do anything right.
No, it's very true. He was hearing that even when the Diamondbacks played them, when we were there for that series. It's because of what he's been gifted, the talent that he has. There's immense responsibilities on that man to finally produce. And it's really one of the more unfair things about Major League Baseball. It's teams that get to the World Series generally have had managers who've had the Midas touch. That's generally part of the equation. And then you get to the World Series and you make some mistakes. Everything is so magnified that everybody just immediately rips the manager.
But he was brought in specifically to win the World Series.
No, I know that.
Because Don Mattingly already had that team winning the division every year, and they just thought he couldn't get him over the hump, so that's why they brought Dave Roberts in.
Yeah.
And he's been doing the same thing, essentially. Mm-hmm. Getting the World Series, though, but losing them.
On the other side, Kevin Cash, the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, talked about how his club's feeling going into Game 6.
The vibe in the clubhouse yesterday, I heard a couple guys, you know, just saying, hey, let's go. Enjoy the off day. Get ready to play. And that's what they do. So I would anticipate them being very consistent.
This is also not telling of anything, but today is the 16-year anniversary of the Boston Red Sox breaking through, winning the World Series for the first time in a long time, since 1918. Could the Dodgers, and we talk about the length of the Dodgers' drought so often, it's only 32 years. When you hold that up against what the Cubs went through and what the Red Sox went through, it doesn't seem like much, but could be significance there, another major market team breaking a World Series drought on this day.
Well, and I wonder how this event is going to be celebrated by Los Angelinos. And I'm not talking about rioting and that kind of stuff. I'm just saying that this is one of these curse-breaking kind of triumphs, and yet the fans haven't been a part of it. And it's taking place in a neutral site. It's one of the unfortunate things. If the Lakers' triumph fell a little flat, imagine waiting 23 years for a World Series title. 27 outs away from the first title in 23 years and feeling kind of strangely detached from it all.
Yes. I guess winning the title is the big thing, but when you wait that long, you have all this pent-up energy that you want to get rid of, and you can't do it to the extreme that you'd like to. There's a story that came out in the last day, though. Los Angeles County is saying that Lakers watch parties, celebrations for them winning the finals, have contributed to a COVID-19 spike in that county, which, okay, there's reason and there's some logic in that thinking. But how do you explain the spikes everywhere else that aren't in Lakers territory?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Don't know the answer to that.
I think the Rays are going to win tonight, Bick.
I hope you're right.
I think we're going to get a Game 7, and I think Major League Baseball needs a Game 7.
I think it does. I really do. I would hate to see this sport kind of exit stage left the way the NBA did. Like I said, with a whimper and not a bang, because as Jared pointed out, this is the last non-football sporting event, major, that we're going to see for quite some time.
Until Christmas at the earliest, probably.
Now, of course, well, guys like me, you've got the Masters coming up, which is going to be sensational. In fact, College Football Game Day is going to broadcast from Augusta National during the golf tournament. I don't know why. I don't know what the connection is.
I can't wait to see Lee Corso put on a Jack Nicklaus head.
I don't know where they're going to do it. They wouldn't let them do that on the grounds. It would have to be in the parking lot. It would have to be maybe out front the facility. I mean, once you get on those grounds, they're hallowed. You can't make a ruckus. You can't.
I know Lee Corso is getting older and his picks aren't as good. I hope he doesn't pick Jack Nicklaus to win.
Yeah. So, but that's kind of what the deal is here. It's going to be all football, all the time.
Which makes you extra thankful that the football team here is good.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Knock on wood. All right, coming up next, Monday Night Football last night, another NFC West team wins a game, and some interesting comments coming out of the Chicago side of things, and some explanation for it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata.
We were talking to Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I know that I don't have time to execute that play call. And, you know, I'm the one out here getting hit. And sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. And so that's something that they have to get worked out.
I don't know. You'll have to, whenever you talk to Nick, just kind of see where he's at with that. Nick and I have a pretty good relationship, and he hasn't said, I mean, he'll probably explain what he meant by that.
That was Brian Griese on Monday Night Football last night on ESPN, kind of dropping a bombshell of something that came out of a production meeting, saying, Nick Foles, I don't have time to carry out that play call because of the lack of protection. Brian Griese, interestingly enough, Bic, went on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt after the game last night, and I was kind of expecting a clarification, but he kind of doubled down.
You know, Scott, it's really disheartening as a quarterback when a play call comes in and you know it, maybe it's a 5 or a 7 step drop, and you know that once you get back to your 5th step or your 7th step, you don't even have time to take a hitch to get rid of the football. And yeah, you might want to push the ball down the field. You might want to throw a 20 yard out, but in Nick Foles' mind, he gets back to his 5th step and he takes the check down right away because he knows that they don't have the protection up front. Now, part of it his scheme, but a big part of it is personnel. They've had injuries on the offensive line, but we've seen other teams when they have injuries on the offensive line, like Dallas, right, or like Philadelphia, they struggle as well, and the Bears are having the same kind of problem.
Wow, pretty telling stuff. And of course, you heard from after the initial Brian Griese soundbite on the way into this conversation, you heard from Matt Nagy saying, "I don't know what we got a good relationship. I don't know what Nick meant by that." Nick Foles spoke after the game too. He relied on the miscommunication term.
That was definitely a miscommunication with Brian and I. You know, we do these pregame conversations the day before the game just to give them information. That conversation, Coach Nagy and I have a great conversation on the sidelines. So there might be times where we go through it beforehand and say, hey, what do you think? And there's times where you got to get the ball out quick and whatnot. But in those situations, like Matt and I have a great relationship on the sideline with conversations and everything. I think, you know, in that situation with Brian, it was just a miscommunication of words because that's not what I was trying to bring across in that conversation.
Well, Brian Griese stated it as fact twice.
Yeah, the miscommunication was he wasn't supposed to share that on TV.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's there. You just got to the bottom of it.
Exactly.
You drill down to the bottom of it.
You get too open and honest in those production meetings, and guess what? You're going to be answering questions in your post-game press conference.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Nick Foles, when he hears his head coach go, yeah, I thought Nick and I had a good relationship. I'm sure he'll have something to say about this. And you're like, okay, that's great. Yeah, I think in the case of the Chicago Bears, one of the things that I was hoping and I thought was going to happen is the NFC West needs to thin out a little bit for my comfort level. And the Bears were a team that was...
For the NFC as a whole.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, the NFC as a whole. And the Bears were a team that, to me, they were achieving beyond their means, if you will. And I would like them to kind of get out of the picture a little bit. See... This should prove to you that I'm not a Chicago fan. I'm cheering for the Bears to get out of the playoff picture.
Well, I mean, the Bears are still 5-2, but when you hold that 5-2 up against a 5-2 team like the Cardinals, a 5-2 team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, doesn't the Bears 5-2 seem a lot different?
Oh, without a doubt.
I think a lot of people have been waiting for a performance like what we saw last night.
And yet, look at who the Bears have beaten. They've beaten some good teams. It's kind of been a smoke and mirror season to this point for the Bears. And going into last night, Bears fans were like, thank goodness we did not go out and trade for Cam Newton.
Yeah. Bears wins, by the way, against Detroit, the Giants, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, and then at Carolina before the loss to the Lions last night. So, you know, they got one pretty impressive win
in there. Their schedule's not as good as I was led to believe.
And they get the Saints on Sunday.
Isn't it funny how there's
then the Titans.
Teams who can teams who can never fill a certain position void.
Yeah.
No matter what era it is, no matter who their coach is.
The Bears quarterback position has got to be one of the most extreme examples of that in professional sports. For a team that's been around that long and there's all kinds of theories on why they don't get good quarterback play, is it weather related, is it wind related, whatever it is, who's been their best quarterback? I mean, single season, you can make an argument for Jay Cutler or Eric Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
In
Eric
terms
Kramer
of results,
had one really good year.
Yeah, in terms of results, Jim McMahon won a Super Bowl, but they've never been able to find that guy.
The and that's part of the reason why they had in 1980 from 1984 to like 1990, they had Super Bowl talent. And they should have had multiple rings, and the quarterback issue and injuries to the quarterback played wreaked havoc on that team.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that the Rex Grossman year, for them to make the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman shows how much talent they had around him.
Oh, absolutely, because Rex Grossman was atrocious.
Oh, yeah.
Even now, like you said, to be 5-2 with the combination of Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles is just going to be so frustrating to have the same problem every year.
I would also like to nominate Nick Foles as one of the weirdest careers in NFL history.
He's only good as a backup.
Well, the one year, his second year in the league, when he got pushed into duty, he did historic things. He threw 27 touchdown passes and two picks. In any other season, he's never had more than 13 touchdown passes. He's never started more than 11 games in any single season, and that was in St. Louis in 2015.
Yeah.
He started games for five different teams, and he's only 31 years old.
He's better under extreme pressure than he is under very manageable situations.
He won a Super Bowl MVP and then got benched as the backup quarterback.
You put him in extreme pressure games, and he performs incredibly well.
Yes. As an Eagle starter, he's 21-11. He's 7-13 for every other team.
That's crazy.
I was just thinking about that last night because I still think about that year when he came out of nowhere to have that historic season for the Eagles, and I thought, wow, maybe he's arrived. Between that and the Super Bowl run in relief of Carson Wentz, he's legendary.
Right. Yeah, listen.
But has there ever been a worse legendary resume ever?
It's very weird.
That's a really good question. Has there ever been a worse legend? Because in Philly, it doesn't. You can't get any bigger than that.
No, he's a folk hero now.
The one that jumps,
and he should be.
The one that jumps to mind is Joe Namath, because he's on a different level than even Nick Foles when it comes to legendary athletes.
Because I mean, you could ask somebody who's a casual sports fan who Nick Foles is, and they would look at you funny. You ask a casual sports fan at a certain point in American history who Joe Namath was, and everybody knew him. He was one of the biggest athletes in the world, but I agree with that. If we were to pose that question to 100 people, Joe Namath would pop up probably 60 to 70 times.
Yeah.
And you look at
it. Joe Namath was a swaggy athlete before swag even existed.
Yes.
Forget posing it to 100 people. I'm going to pose it to 14,500 people right now.
Oh, wow. Look at that. I guess Joe Namath gets mentioned 60 to 70 times. It was a different era then because defenders were allowed to play defense. So
Is Bucky Dent a good one?
And Aaron Boone in the same breath.
Bucky bleeping Dent. I will say this, though, and I was young, but I was still living in New York at the height of Bucky Dent's powers.
Yeah.
He was a decent defensive shortstop.
And that's it.
But he was like
35.
But he was like a movie star. Every woman in New York loved him.
Uh-huh.
My sister, who's 2.5 years older than me, I think she still loves Bucky Dent.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Bucky Dent was a career 247 hitter, 40 home runs in his career.
He clears the Green Monster in left field in Fenway, and it's forever.
That's a good question. We got to throw that out there.
Okay.
Yeah, put that out there for social studies, Jarrett. Troy Aikman, too. Troy Aikman, I know he won a bunch.
Terry Bradshaw in the same breath on that, too.
Troy, I think Terry Bradshaw's passing numbers are way more impressive than Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman threw more than 19 touchdown passes once in his career.
Yeah, but Troy Aikman was good, right?
He didn't have to do much.
No, he didn't. He had a great offensive line, a great running game, skill players all over the place. Jay Novacek, Michael Irvin, Alvin Harper!
I love when you guys are in sync like that.
All right. right, coming up next, we do have an explanation from DeAndre Hopkins went down on his way to the stadium on Sunday. We'll tell you what he said next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.